welcome back to the Young Turks, Anna Kasparian, Grace, and wow, I'm like stuttering like crazy. Ambry and Grace join us for hour two. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'm super excited for hour two because we don't ever really have female panels.
I know. Yeah, this is awesome. I'm very excited.
It's gonna be good.
And it's great for the stories that we have today.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Perfect.
So real quick, I'm gonna go ahead and read a few TYT lives and then Grace will take it away.
Cool.
I am Sock writes in, do Republicans take a blood oath that makes it impossible for them to pass gun laws, raise taxes, or not try to ban abortion? I don't even know. Look, I think that those issues have different influences, right? I think with taxes, certainly there are lobbyists behind it, but a lot of them are wealthy themselves. Like lawmakers make a lot of money, you know, like. And so do people in corporate media. So that's one of the reasons why they don't really talk about it as aggressively as members of independent media. So
yeah, the incentive isn't there.
That's exactly right. With abortion, I think it's pandering to the religious base, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's because they genuinely think a zygote is the same as a living, breathing human. And then when it comes to guns, I mean, we know how powerful the NRA is. So, all right, I want you to take it away.
Cool.
Do your thing.
All right, so we have a quick update from a story from yesterday. You may remember hearing about Representative Tim Murphy. He is the embattled anti-abortion lawmaker who allegedly encouraged his mistress to terminate her own pregnancy. He had said that he was going to resign from office or retire after 2018. Well, now it has come out that he is actually going to resign at the end of this month. From Paul Ryan, this afternoon I received a letter of resignation from Congressman Tim Murphy, effective October 21st. Speaker Paul Ryan said in a statement, it was Dr. Murphy's decision to move on to the next chapter of his life, and I support it. So I guess no big shocker here. Were you guys surprised when you heard that this was news today?
I guess I was a little surprised because we're in this like new world of Republican lawmakers doing things that are so deeply hypocritical and embarrassing and then not apologizing for it, like doubling down on it.
And no consequences.
And no consequences. So I was like, oh wow, he's gonna, you know, he's gonna step down. That's actually pretty amazing. And I'm glad that he is, and he should.
Yeah, I think it's straightforward. He should. I agree that we're in an age where it's like, oh, we kind of legislate morality and we kind of do immoral things and there are no consequences for it. I think because it was so glaring, and I think Paul Ryan even, you know, he says that it was his own decision to step down, but I feel like, you know, we know that a couple of congressmen went to see him, like, you gotta leave.
Yeah, he was like, I supported it. It was basically like an I urged it.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah, you gotta get the hell out of here.
So, yeah, so that's a little quick update for you guys, and now we can move into some new stories to cover today. The first being one that is near and dear to my heart, affects my own LGBT community. So, Jeff Sessions has just announced that they will be reversing a policy that protects transgender workers from discrimination. This is for his Justice Department. Let me break down exactly what we're talking about. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has reversed a federal government policy that said transgender workers were protected from discrimination under a 1964 civil rights law, according to a memo on Wednesday sent to agency heads and U.S. attorneys. Sessions' directive says Title VII's prohibition on sex discrimination encompasses discrimination between men and women, but does not encompass discrimination based on gender identity per se, including transgender status. So this is likely going to result in the Justice Department fighting against transgender workers in court. We're going to see how that's going to play out. They go on to say in this directive, this is a conclusion of law, not policy. As a law enforcement agency, the Department of Justice may interpret Title VII as written by Congress. Now, of course, there is a counter opinion to this. Sharon McGowan is a former lawyer for the Justice Department Civil Rights Division, and now is an attorney for the LGBT group Lambda Legal. Shout out Lambda Legal. My fiance is an attorney, and they do good work. It's ironic for them to say this is law and not policy. The memo is devoid of discussion of the way case law has been developing in this area for the last few years. It demonstrates that this memo is not actually a reflection of the law as it is. It is a reflection of what the DOJ wishes the law were. Now, this is something that they point out in this article. I think it's important because it affects my interpretation of what's going on. At issue in the latest policy is how broadly the government interprets Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which does not address the LGBT rights directly. Rather, it prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. And what we are seeing from the Justice Department, as I think perfectly stated by Devin O'Malley, he says the following: the Department of Justice cannot expand the law beyond what Congress has provided. Basically, what we saw in the Obama administration is a pretty broad interpretation on what these protections afford and who they should be protecting. And now we are seeing the Trump administration over time sort of roll back those protections. We actually reported on it on a Title VII issue where the Justice Department issued an amicus brief over an appeals case from New York's Second Circuit. It was very strange that the federal government would get involved. Now they're issuing another briefing on this. Let's hear from you guys, because this is very frustrating for me and my community.
So I wanna comment on the interpretation of the law in a second. But first, I just wanna make a point about how crazy it is that this is what Jeff Sessions thinks is important right now. Like stripping away protections for entire groups of people. That is his, you know, his objective. That is what he feels is important to do as, you know, Attorney General. Like he thinks that is a priority right now. Stripping away protections against discrimination for an entire group of people. It's just, it's strange, if you want to be nice, yeah. But I want to use other words, which I will refrain from doing right now. In terms of the law, though, it really comes down to the way it's interpreted, right? And so if I were to be honest, I don't think that Congress wrote the law in 1964 with the LGBT community in mind at all. And did they purposely write it in a way so it's broad to, you know, maybe include people who identify with a different gender? Honestly, probably not. But that's the way, as you mentioned, the Obama administration interpreted it. So if this is a situation that makes it to the courts and you know, you have federal judges making decisions on it, it really depends on, you know, their interpretation of it and whether they think that this was a specific law that pertains only to men and women and discrimination between those two, or if it's something that could be interpreted as vague enough to include the LGBT community.
Yeah, I agree. In terms of Jeff Sessions, I think the term, in the statement Jeff Sessions has just announced has become like my least favorite thing to hear.
Right.
Because I think, you know, while he was embroiled in all of the drama and everyone was concerned that why isn't he just stepped down because he and Trump were having this kind of contentious relationship. No, like Jeff Sessions has a vested interest in rolling back civil rights. Like he's going to stick around until he sees that through. And he's made that clear. Not only with kind of this, these memos, these yeah. weak memos that he's written with regard to rolling back protections for the LGBTQ plus community, but also declaring a war on drugs, right? Also
so
decreasing the Obama era kind of legislation on closing private prisons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that was something that he introduced. Like so, and then like anti. We're just all fumbling words today, but reverse discrimination in college admissions, right? So all of these things that aren't really issues that he's kind of really dug his heels into. Meanwhile, we have like real issues that we'd like our Justice Department to investigate.
Right. And look, right now there's also this issue between Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions over Sessions recusing himself in the Russia administration. And I have never wanted Trump to fire anyone more, right? If he were to fire Sessions for that reason, it would be one of the worst reasons to fire someone, but I'll take it.
Like, yeah, if the consequences is, and I do think that we do need to amend the Civil Rights Act so there are explicit protections for sexual orientation and gender identity. To your point, I think at the time, right, our notions of sex and conceptions of sex at the time were very basic, and we didn't acknowledge the fact that sex and gender are socially mm-hmm. constructed. They're not these fixed things. So our society is pushing back against that. We need policies that reflect that.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. I hate that I have to read through this, and I unfortunately can see exactly the point of the Justice Department here, because they are saying that, hey, these provisions are not literally included
right.
in the law. It's just up to interpretation. Obama administration interpreted one way, we're gonna say something different.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that I can agree with them on that. It's true, there aren't those provisions in Title VII. So why don't we change that? Let's change that. It should be amended. This is not 1964 anymore. The law needs to be changed. I would like to see that incentive rather than just Devin O'Malley saying, well, we can't expand the law beyond what Congress has provided. We would have no idea what to do. We should work on that, man.
Right, you're absolutely right. And just to give you another example, after the Supreme Court ruled against the Defense of Marriage Act, there was also this issue about how, okay, well, now there's marriage equality, but remember, we don't have a federal law banning employers from discriminating against gay employees.
Sure.
So that's another example of a situation where congressional leaders need to be leaders, and they haven't been so far, and that's cause for concern.
Yeah, and force Republicans to openly vote against it, right? Even if you don't think the amendment would pass, force them to openly say, we don't want this, you know, we don't want folks to have these rights, right? Yeah. Instead of the statement saying, we will continue to affirm the dignity of all people, including transgender individuals. Like, that's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Force them to say it, to vote against it.
Perhaps even bullshit, perhaps.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Oh man, I love this woman so much. So the mayor of San Juan is making news for the following shirt that she wore on a news broadcast. Here it is, nasty. Now you may remember that that is in reference to Donald Trump calling her nasty via tweet, because that's what we expect from our dignified politicians. This is also what she said on the news. So it's not just the shirt that's making news, it is her speaking out, it's her bold talk against the president of the administration. She says, this was a PR 17-minute meeting, she said during an interview on MSNBC while wearing the shirt. She was describing a meeting the president had during his trip to Puerto Rico in which he assembled a round table of national and local officials and encouraged them to praise the federal response to the crisis on the island. She even went on to say, in fact, this terrible and abominable view of him throwing paper towels and throwing provisions at people, it does not embody the American spirit. And I'm sure she actually had some harsher words. Now, some people I saw on the internet were saying that her wearing the shirts, and this isn't the first time that she has worn a shirt that would sort of embody her position following Hurricane Maria. They say it's maybe petty, she doesn't need to go there.
Really?
I vehemently disagree.
Okay.
I vehemently disagree, but what do you think about it?
I think, how about we take a little step back and understand who the real petty person is here, right? The petty person is the individual who talked about his penis size during the campaign. The petty individual is the one who attacks anyone who criticizes him in any way whatsoever. He can't take a tiny, tiny amount of criticism. Trump calls Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. He calls him Rocket Man. He's the one who referred to women as nasty in the first place. That's petty. It's so frustrating because it's as if he is completely exempt from any criticism from any of his actions. But she wears a shirt that says nasty, which I think is hilarious because Trump has redefined what nasty means, right?
Well, yeah.
It's now a badge of honor for women because if he thinks you're nasty, it means you get under his skin because you call him out on his BS.
And also, there are two sides of this too. Some people are saying she's petty. A lot of people are celebrating her as well because she's making the most of her time on the air. If you are in an airport, which is, I assume, where people watch news, if you're in an airport and it's on mute, you can't even watch it, then you can still see that she is wearing nasty on the shirt. Then it will bring to mind these tweets from Donald Trump. I think she's really getting her message home using a visual medium to the best of her ability and also using her words. So I think this is great.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, everyone says that Trump is like a conflict president, right? That he likes conflict, but he likes conflict from afar, right? He tweets these things. The real presidential thing to do would have been to go to this area, would have been to meet one-on-one with her. If you think that she's getting too political, right, and you think that she's being problematic, then go have the conversation. Wade your ass in the water where she's at and go have the conversation instead of critiquing her from a distance, which I think is just cowardly. And it, again, obscures the fact that there is a natural disaster and there are people in need, right?
Exactly. And when he did go to Puerto Rico and he did meet with officials there, think about his behavior and how he refused to even acknowledge her. That's petty. So you want to have a conversation about petty, that's petty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I actually wish that maybe if they sold those shirts, I think a lot of people would actually buy it to support hurricane relief. Just a thought. Yeah. Who knows?
We got to take a quick break. So let's do that. When we come back, what are we talking about?
Talking about Harvey Weinstein. You guys have probably seen this scathing piece that the New York Times did on him. There's a lot going on there. We're also going to be talking about Cam Newton. Why is he making headlines? And a really interesting story from the Washington Post on a landscaper's desire to hire American and how it ended with him not hiring Americans.
Welcome back, everyone. Anna Kasparian, Ambria Allen, and Grace Baldridge with you. I didn't stutter that time. I didn't make a fool out of myself.
Great.
All right, a few TYT lives for you.
Okay.
Alana says, Anna, my fiance makes fun of me for tweeting because you never pick mine. Please give a shout out so I can laugh at him.
Yay! Yeah. Ha ha!
Equality.
Like laughing equality. At you.
All right, great. I love that we were able to help. Mixed Pancake says, Puerto Rico still needs help. But so comforting to know these repugs are more worried about trans folks and women's bodies. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, and again, a lot of it is about pandering, like with a 20-week abortion ban, pandering to that religious base. There is a reason why Trump tweeted about the transgender ban right after the first failed attempt to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. And then finally, Gabby says, Jeff Sessions should be careful. The 1964 Civil Rights Act doesn't protect Keebler elves from discrimination either. That was pretty funny.
It's true, unless we interpret it as such. All right, let's get back into the hour. The New York Times has released a report detailing decades of sexual harassment accusations against Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. An investigation by the New York Times found previously undisclosed allegations against Mr. Weinstein stretching over nearly three decades, documented through interviews with current and former employees and film industry workers, as well as legal records, emails and internal documents from the businesses he has run, Miramax and the Weinstein Company. During that time, after being confronted with allegations including sexual harassment and unwanted physical contact, Mr. Weinstein has reached at least eight settlements with women, according to two company officials speaking on the condition of anonymity. Now, the report is extensive, it goes on, and it's important that if you're interested, you read the full thing, but there is a pattern that they point out, which is the following. Across the years and continents, accounts of Mr. Weinstein's conduct share a common narrative. Women reported to a hotel for what they thought were work reasons, only to discover that Mr. Weinstein, who has been married for most of three decades, sometimes seemed to have different interests. Now, an important person that they point out and that they cite is Lauren O'Connor, who is a former colleague of the Weinstein Company. She sent out a memo to several executives at the company, and they cite her a lot in this report. But that kind of gets a little blurry towards the end because Mr. Weinstein had reached a settlement with Ms. O'Connor. She had withdrawn her complaint, and there was no longer anything to investigate. Because this matter has been resolved and no further action is required, I withdraw my complaint, Ms. O'Connor wrote in an email to the head of human resources 6 days after sending her memo. She also wrote a letter to Mr. Weinstein thanking him for the opportunity to learn about the entertainment industry. Weinstein's lawyers have announced that they are preparing to sue the Times, and all the proceeds of that suit will go towards women's organizations, but not before Harvey Weinstein released a kind of confusing statement of his own. I'm going to read in part, but again, check out the full statement. Here's part of it. I came of age in the 1960s and 70s when all the rules about behavior in workplaces were different. That was the culture then. I appreciate the way I've behaved with colleagues in the past has caused a lot of pain, and I sincerely apologize for it. I've brought on therapists, and I plan to take a leave of absence from my company and to deal with this issue head on. I so respect all women and regret what happened. He also misquotes a Jay-Z lyric, and then he says that he's going to be pointing his full attention to the NRA.
No, this is
among
this
other
is,
things.
This is the part that, first of all, please read the full New York Times report because it goes into many details, very graphic details, and there are so many women involved, and this took place over such a long period of time. So, and some of it occurred as recently as 2014. So I'm not buying his BS argument about how, like, well, I grew up in a different culture, I guess things have changed, and now it's time for me. No, you should have noticed how much the culture has changed, and to do the same type of stuff in 2014 makes it abundantly clear that he didn't really care about the culture. He didn't take any of that into consideration. He was and is a man that has some degree of power, and he thought he could get away with it. Much like you know, what happened at Fox News with Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. But I do want to quickly mention how he ended his statement, because he couldn't just leave it at, I messed up and I need help and I'm getting help. He pandered. He pandered to individuals that are upset and emotional over what's going on with mass shootings in the country. And he just goes on this like spiel about, you know, what he wants to do personally to stop gun violence in America. And no.
Well, also within that exact same paragraph, he talks about how, you know, he's, I hope Wayne LaPierre enjoys his retirement party. And then a couple sentences down, and this is the full sentence, is 1 year ago, I began organizing a $5 million foundation to give scholarships to women directors at USC.
So did Bill Cosby.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, you can be philanthropic and still be a rapist. Like, you, two things can be true. So you talking about all the money that you've given, you can keep your money and stop being a rapist and stop sexually assaulting folks. Like, they don't work against each other. Like, oh, I'm gonna be crazy, but then just give $1,000. Like, that's not how it works. Be a better person.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive.
Right.
And I feel like the way that he ended his statement was, again, trying to pander and trying to make him out to be, you know, this great person. And I just, I feel like that, unfortunately, like, nullifies anything else that he said, you know, in that statement. I will say this, I was actually shocked that he took responsibility, because that is not the way things usually play out. Like, we know that that's not how it played out at Fox News. Bill O'Reilly still denies it. Roger Ailes denied it till the day he died.
Right.
And in this case, you know, Weinstein is taking responsibility, which I'm glad he's doing that, but the way he ended that statement was so unnecessary.
The whole statement reads as though he said it aloud to Siri in a note and then was like, yep, yeah, print that one.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that came to my mind, and that's the statement that I'm gonna go with. Down to misquoting Jay-Z. If you're gonna be releasing a statement, you know that's gonna be printed in the New York Times. Just double check the lyric before you—
Or don't quote you, Jay-Z.
Don't quote Jay-Z or any other public figure.
Don't bring him into that. Like, be a respectable person, or at least try to pretend that you are. You have all the opportunity to write something, revise it. Like, you have folks around you, apparently a team of therapists who you've been working with to help you not be a misogynist. I also think this speaks to the need to have more women in positions of power in these companies. Not to say that that's just the solution to sexual harassment, but it would certainly help. I mean, and I think even some of the women in the report talk about going before some of these panels and bringing other women with them to corroborate their story, right? So there's just power in terms of numbers and having representation of women in these spaces. I think it would help, particularly as the culture is changing.
It's crazy. All right, so, well, this is another great story to talk about for an all-female panel. NFL quarterback Cam Newton is making headlines for his response to a female reporter's question. Let's take a look.
I know you take a lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and making, getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes, like, it's funny. But fun is coming along, man. We're gonna this is a big game for him because of, you know, him being from Detroit.
So that wasn't a particularly funny question. Jordan Rogue was the beat reporter for the Carolina Panthers. She has said on Twitter that she wasn't asking about routes to be funny. She was doing it because it was her job. She also went on to say, because a lot of people were asking, well, did you speak with Cam Newton following this interaction? She said on Twitter, I spoke with him after and it was worse. I chose not to share because I have an actual job to do today and one he will not keep me from. A lot of media organizations have spoken out about Cam's response. People are saying it was very inappropriate. One was the Association for Women in Sports Media. They said the following, AWSM is very discouraged by Cam Newton's disrespectful remarks and actions directed to a female reporter during today's Carolina Panthers press conference. As a watchdog group, AWSM demands fair treatment and positive workplace environments for women working in sports media. Now, a lot of people that I've seen online, I talked about this with the TYT sports team, who are excellent, please check out their channel, are saying, well, what is the importance of having female representation in a male-dominated industry? Well, let's just remember that nearly 50% of NFL fans are women, so they should be represented there, because without fans, you don't have a league. And then also, it's worth noting that Dannon has decided they will not renew a contract with him. I've heard it reported that Dannon dropped him. That's not the case. They're just not renewing their contract. And now, with that said, we have an all-female panel today to discuss why these remarks are inappropriate and disrespectful. What was your response when you saw this? Were you surprised?
Well, I don't know anything about him, so was I surprised? No. When people were mentioning his name, I'm like, I don't know who that guy is. So I didn't know anything about his background. And the reason why I say I'm not surprised is because, you know, that mentality still exists in the sports world, where it's like surprising to some people that women are interested in sports, that women want to report on sports. And I'm also not surprised because it involves an NFL player, and the culture around the NFL, even considering the fact that 50% or half of their viewers are women, and half of their consumers are women, more importantly, they still try to back their players when in domestic assault cases. Those stories were running rampant a couple years ago. They back their players when it comes to most situations like this, and they'll try to brush it under the rug. And even today, I forget which NFL official it was, I apologize, but I was listening to his statement, and he essentially said, you know, he kind of brushed it off and then said, but you know, I'd rather talk about this upcoming game, and immediately talked about the upcoming game. So look, I think it's important to consider that in a lot of households, the female has a considerable amount of buying power. She budgets the money. I'm not saying that that's the most important thing to consider, but for those of you who are like, oh, whatever, who cares? Don't hurt. You're hurting some people's feelings. It's not a big deal. Well, it will hurt your bottom line. So if you think it's not that big of a deal, I mean, we'll see how that turns out when, you know, your ticket sales decrease and your merchandise sales decrease. And then one other thing. Someone had mentioned to me, I was debating a man over this, and he's like, I don't think that's what he meant. I was like, okay, so what did he mean? And I'm curious, does anyone have an answer for that? Because the individual I was debating couldn't give me an answer
about what his potential intention could have been by
like
laughing.
What was he implying by laughing?
I don't know. I mean, what I would think is that he probably is interviewed a lot by men who are not professional football players. Now, it'd be different if she was playing an armchair quarterback and saying, oh, you missed that throw, like I could have done that. You know, people do that sometimes. It's not good reporting. That's not what she did. She asked a very legitimate question. And if you were to have said that Jordan is actually a pretty gender neutral name, say that Jordan was a man, I don't think that he would have found the question as funny, even though, you know, she maybe, or he or she doesn't have any football experience. Does that make sense? I think the only thing that I could think of is that he's laughing at a reporter asking a question that he presumes she'd have no experience over, but you don't need to have played the sport to have extensive knowledge of
it. No, dude, oh, yeah, he specifically mentioned female. His wording was so specific. I just find it funny that a female is mentioning routes.
All right, yeah. Would it have been different if he had said, I just find it funny that a reporter is asking me about routes. What do you know about routes? You haven't played the game. Would this be a news story?
Maybe some people would make it a news story, but I don't think that it would be as clear. And yeah. I don't even know if we would ever talk about it.
Yeah, most reporters haven't played. You know what I mean? That's why they were reporting, you know? So yeah. I think the story is the obvious sexism. What bothers me is that he laughs in her face.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, it's just disrespectful. It's stupid.
So condescending.
It's really condescending, and it's stupid. And to your point about the bottom line, you know, you lost a yogurt endorsement. Bitches eat yogurt. Like, you gotta pay attention to who, you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing?
But he still signed Under Armour, and Under Armour, like, they're not gonna budge. Like, he still has other endorsements.
Yeah,
he's
Under Armour is also problematic for different reasons. But, you know, I will say that this whole story is a good lesson in intersectionality, in that it did come out that this reporter And her background has some unsavory, mm-hmm. potentially racist tweets.
Yeah.
So then now the conversation is about, you know, if she's racist and he's sexist, right? Like, again, my point, my motto is that two things can be true. Everybody needs to get their politics together. Mm-hmm. Cam, NFL, get your gender politics together.
And another thing that when we were covering the story that I asked our sports team about, that they brought up is that there's a little bit of a double standard. They cited Rob Gronkowski is another NFL player, and they're saying that he's made sort of inappropriate remarks to reporters, female reporters, and I don't know that the specifics of those statements, but I trust Jason Rubin very much, and he said that, you know, when he does that, he's being playful, he's messing around. Now Cam Newton makes this remark, which is again still disrespectful, and he comes under national media scrutiny.
Sure.
And we don't see that carried over. Rob Gronkowski is a white player, just for reference.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Right.
Sure. All of this is racialized. I mean, our president is not under scrutiny, doesn't fall under the same kind of scrutiny. And he's said awful things about women. Mm-hmm. But I do think, again, that two things can be true, that like, if we don't wanna be disrespected, let's work on our politics, our race politics, our gender politics, our politics around sex, right? Like, we need to be better. And I think that it's interesting that these two things kind of come to the fore at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, do we have time for one more story?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So there's a really interesting article from the Washington Post that tells the story of Jesus Chuy Medrano. He's a landscaper from Denver, and he had this plan to hire American, and it really just ended up with him having to hire more Mexican workers. Let me break down the details here. So Kokal is a Denver-based landscaping company. It hires dozens of temporary workers from Mexico each year because it can't find enough Americans to take the jobs. And this is a company owned by Jesus Chuy Medrano. Now, in landscaping, tourism, seafood processing, and other seasonal industries, employers are desperate to find Americans who will stay on the job for the pay they are able to offer. $14 an hour is the starting salary at Medrano's firm. Until now, those industries have leaned heavily on a controversial visa program for seasonal workers called H-2B visas. But Congress has reduced the number of available visas by nearly 30% from 2016, and President Trump's promise to limit legal as well as illegal immigration and protect American workers has Medrano worried. He was once an undocumented worker, so he used to hire a lot of undocumented workers just to sort of pay it forward because it was what happened to him, how he got on his feet when he first came to the United States. But now he sees that the climate is changing in the country. He wanted to hire more American workers, but it didn't really work out. He raised the hourly wage for unskilled laborers to $13.95, 50% more than Colorado's minimum wage. He stopped firing workers for absenteeism, including a foreman who went AWOL during a two-week drinking binge. He hired more women, allowing mothers to work just the hours their children are in school, as well as high school and college students on summer break. And still, he was short-staffed. Mm-hmm. Some showed up to orientation only to say, "I'm not going to do that for $14 an hour," Medrano recounted. New hires, unaccustomed to work boots, complained of sore, blistered feet. Some walked off the job after 3 days, and this drove him to a desperate point. Kokal had to submit paperwork showing that the company would suffer permanent irreparable harm without hiring migrants. The company's request was approved within 2 weeks, and Medrano was on his way to Mexico to meet with the workers, and they ended up completing their season, but it really had him scrambling at the end. This is such an interesting story. Please check out the full article on the Washington Post. But first, let me get a reaction from this.
Excuse me. I mean, I'm not surprised. This is something that happens over and over again. It happens with farmers and farmers who increase the wages significantly, offer benefits, including healthcare, retirement plans. They do everything they can to attract American workers because they're concerned, especially under the Trump administration, that they will face some sort of consequence if they hire undocumented immigrants to do the work. And they can't find people who are willing to do the job. That's not based on my opinion. That's based on fact, what's happening throughout the country with various industries. And people don't believe it, but it's true. Mm-hmm. It's happening.
Yeah, and also, I mean, what he says is that, yeah, he was able to complete a season, he was able to get the work done, but he said that it was just like a little Band-Aid on the problem that his company is going to face, and he senses that the climate is changing, so he had to make some changes. But it reads like a parable. You know, it really reads like, well, this law was put into place, and then this happened, and he tried to do this, and then this happened, and it's really frustrating because this is an honest guy trying to make an honest living at his landscaping firm.
I just want to quickly mention one other specific example. There were wineries in Napa, California, that had previously hired undocumented immigrants to pick the grapes. And that's a difficult job. And they decided, okay, we're going to comply with laws and ensure that we hire American workers. And guess what? Their grapes would rot because they couldn't find people to fill those jobs. So this is a real problem. And even with the wages increasing well above minimum wage, they're having a hard time, you know, attracting those workers. And it's something to keep in mind when we're having these ridiculous black or white debates about immigration. So unfortunately, we're about to run out of time, but I do want to direct you guys to the postgame show, tytnetwork.com/join. If you'd like to be a member, we'll have a fun postgame show today. And Aggressive Progressives will happen later tonight, so make sure you check that out. Jimmy Dore will, of course, put together a great show for you guys. We'll see you soon. Love you, and we'll see you tomorrow.